Blog Talk Radio.
Wheresoever you go throughout the world, the black man is discarded, is ostracized, is relegated to the lowest in things, social, political, and economical. This therefore suggests a problem and one that must be solved. We in this section of the world are not entirely free from this unkind, unsympathetic, and uncharitable behavior of the groups or races around us. But since man has been placed on his own responsibility, whether he be black, white, or yellow, he must act on his own account. We will not unduly whine or complain, but reason among ourselves and see what can be done to remedy this state of affairs. Life is a conflict. You have to fight your way through it, whether you will it or not. Those of us who are able to fight most stubbornly live, accomplish most, and to them go the laurels, the palms, and triumph of our civilization and world. We unfortunately have not been trained nor educated to the truths of life, paradoxically so. May I say something to you to give you a true knowledge of yourself and life, so that the same glory and success attained by other men who understand themselves may be yours. Man in the full knowledge of himself is a superb and supreme creature of creation. When man becomes possessor of the knowledge of himself, he becomes master of his environment, the captain of his own ship, the director of his own destiny, the accomplisher of his own ends. Man should understand himself because man is full of knowledge, and this knowledge is a gift of nature. When Mother Nature created man, she deprived him of nothing. He was given the faculty of understanding all things around him. And this faculty for understanding has not been taken away from him. None of his senses have been taken away from him. So there is no excuse for the black man in lacking the knowledge that man is used to beautify the world and produce all that he needs for his happiness and civilization. Look the world over, and whatever you see in it that is pleasing to man, contributing to man's comfort, to his needs, and to his satisfaction, it is but the work of man. Man blessed with the knowledge of himself and the understanding of all things around him. If you are able to live with the knowledge of yourself and with the greater knowledge of nature, you must know what is good and what is not. You must know what is finite. You must know that which is material, physical, and otherwise is at your disposal to create or otherwise use. If we leave America and go over to the east, to Japan, they will be telling their fellow citizens of Japan of the wonderful accomplishments of the Japanese people, proving that man is moving onward as time moves on. But you have hated yourselves as you have done in previous years. You have shown malice, prejudice, and hate to each other. And the result is that while other races have made progress, while India has made progress towards nationalism, while Ireland has made progress towards republicanism, while the whole world has made progress in man's accomplishments, you still stand fighting yourselves, dishonoring yourselves, showing no disposition toward that higher life so that you will be abundantly blessed. So reflect and think that you were created for some purpose other than exhibiting malice toward your neighbor or fellow men of your own race. What a pity it is that we cannot stand united without the written law. There is no written law compelling other races to stand together. They are brought together by the gentle touch of nature. The unwritten law of nature causes them to stand together on all occasions. So wheresoever you find them in the field, that one gentle touch of nature causes them to stand together, if need be, die together. But with the black man, you can preach to him from the pulpits. You lecture from the platforms, from the byways and the hedges. The spirit of cooperation, but he will not cooperate. You talk to him gently, you try talking harshly to him, he still will not cooperate. The result is that he falls prey to those who understand themselves and walk through the world making you their serfs and slaves. We must acquire the higher knowledge of life. Black men and black women, will you get the knowledge that the white man has that causes him to be leaders and masters in the world? They are not gods with a peculiar source for understanding the world around them. They have only given expression to the knowledge of their humanity and been able to use and conquer all to their satisfaction and glory. And that is why they are always greater than you in every community that you find them. Isn't it strange that wheresoever the white man is found, he takes precedence over you? Why is that so? Answer that for yourselves, black men and black women. Wheresoever you come in contact with the white man, you always have to go down in defeat before him. Whether it be in England, in France, or in America, you always have to go down to the white man, and yet he has two eyes, two feet, two hands, same passions, same senses and feelings as you have. Your feet are not put on opposite sides, now your hands turned around the other way. But it's because you fail to use your will, your knowledge, and your mental faculties to the point where you will enjoy life around you. It is against us as an African people. It's not because of color. It's because of our condition. If we must have justice, we must be strong. If we must be strong, we must come together. If we must come together, we can only do so through the system of organization. That's a fight for Africa. that teaches you to depend upon another race is a leadership that will enslave you. They gave leadership to our foreparents, and that leadership made them slaves. But we've decided to find a leadership of our...
Greetings and welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, today. And here, I'm in Chicago, and it's cold. I don't like...
Thank you. How are you?
This is Khalid Muhammad, former national representative of Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. Mr. Muhammad is the man who made so much...
I'm really not sure what's going on here. See, Blog Talk playing some games again, once again, as usual. And I've been having that over the years. That's another reason I didn't do shows for a minute. But today I want to go ahead and give a few thoughts on Dr. Claude Anderson was correct. And he said some things a few years ago that's related to today. I'm going to say this early. And you take it either way. You know, just hopefully you take it the right way. But I'm tired of people talking about these immigrants and they're doing that and they're doing this and they're giving them this and they don't. Okay, the crime and, you know, people born in this country do a lot more crime, a hell of a lot more crime. So I don't get it. They just go ahead trying to, you know, dump on a group of people that has they really don't have a whole lot of protection. And for those people who are saying things about these immigrants, it's like, why don't you go back to your home and all this other stuff? And I've been trying to tell people that a lot of these countries from the South, a lot of their citizens are migrating to the North. If you go here and look at the history of those countries, you'll see the U.S. had hand and undermining their governments. And nobody's paying attention to that. And the U.S. has been undermining governments for a long time. And in a lot of interviews, if you go here and you hear, you know, they have, the U.S. government has a problem with another country, and they say, hey, look, it's time for regime change. Who in the fuck are you to go here and tell these people they need to change, who represent them, who speak for them, and how they run their country? So, we have to go ahead and pay attention to that. Look at our own plight, you know, what's going on with us. You know, the different African nations that the U.S., even to this day, are undermining. We don't pay attention to that. A lot of reasons we don't pay attention to that because we got the voices that are growing are saying, that's them people over there. I ain't African. I'm black. You know, black don't have no goddamn origins. You're an African, period. And there's one individual that I have been going back and forth with last few months. He said something about history. That happened way back when and way back then and all this ridiculous nonsense. And I say, hey, look, you know, you can't know who you are until you know where you're going. You must go ahead and make decisions based off what you learned yesterday so you can deal with today, and then so you can go ahead and appropriately handle what might happen, and there's no definite point, no definite that's going to, but things that might happen tomorrow. You prepare for it. And one example I give for that is, hell, if you got a job, what the hell you go to work for today? Because you prepare to go ahead and have that roof over your fucking head tomorrow. So let's not make silly-ass fucking statements, man. I mean, you need to pay attention to what's going on and pay attention to that history and to the history of our people. I got a brother's hand up. Let me see who this is. Okay.
Hey, what's going on?
What is?
Yeah, what's up with you, Nas? This is Shabaka St. Corey. How you be this morning?
Well, look, I'm doing fine, man. You know, I like to go ahead and say the brother has a show over there, man. I just see certain words, and I just go ahead and go to Blog Talk, and then I go to the show. So, say your complete name of your show and the host that are at the show.
Oh, yes, sir, absolutely, yeah. It's Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. I'm your host, Shabaka Sankore. Our co-host is the one and only Jay and crewman, Lady Jay. And we also are a division of Frontline Black News, and we do our stream yards on the like page of Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced as well. And over the years, Nas, as you know, brother, is that we get our hate mail that we enjoy, and we have had some of the most brilliant people come on our podcast that you know of, including yourself, one of the brilliant people. And then we have had some of the most stupid and most asinine motherfuckers that came up there, man, with the most stupidest of shit. Okay, and you already know who I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. But I'm going to tell you something. let me tell you something.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
You know, that particular, we're talking about, you know, that particular fucker. Well, you mentioned two names that I'm familiar with, and I won't say them
right now,
but. Believe it or not, they're kind of the mild ones that used to be around here, man. Believe it or not,
they're
kind of some of the mild ones. And then what I noticed recently, there's like a younger voice coming in now, and they're just as retarded.
Oh, yes, sir, absolutely. You know, and the part that really kills me, man, is this here. As Dr. Claude Anderson had stated years ago about how these migrants are going to be the new Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, hold on, brother. Hold on, brother.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, mute yourself real quick. Let me go ahead and play you something, because I recorded a lot of that stuff.
Yes,
and I was
sir.
Trying to go ahead and bring them on,
okay.
You know, so I was trying to download a lot of them, but Blog Talk started tripping, and then it just, like, confused the whole switchboard thing there, man. So
right.
Some of the things I have here are gone, and some of those clips on. But I want you to listen to this when he's talking about the, let me get to the one.
Okay, I'm good.
Here we go. Let's listen to this one. He's talking about Chinatown.
Okay, all righty. Okay, I'm muting myself. Okay, listen.
All of America, on Friday evening. Go to any big city, and you'll see blacks lined up to get into Chinatown to go to eat some Chinese food. Have you ever seen Chinese lined up trying to get into a black town? Somebody is not playing with a full deck. You're not playing the game to win. You're just playing. And you got to stop spending your money. So then I go to various cities, and blacks got the nasty habit. When company comes, putting them in their car on a Sunday and taking them out to the white community and say, let me go out and show you some nice white homes. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Let's go out to look at the white malls. And then they come back home and say, how in the world can white folk afford all those fine homes and big houses? It's easy. It's your money. You see what I'm saying? And y'all think I'm teasing. See, they're living off of two incomes. They live off 100% of their income and 95% of yours. And you're trying to live off of 2%. It is humanly impossible for a race of people to live off of 2% of their income. And in America, you equate human worth based on what you own. And if black folk don't own 2%, that's why white racists say, black folk ain't worth 2 cents. Because we don't own anything, and human worth is equated in this country based on what you own and control. And we violate all the premises of economics. We have yet to learn how to practice group economics. And the last thing about integration is that integration got a quota system, and you need to know this. It's got a quota system. You hear white somebody against quotas, they're wrong. It's got a quota system. Anytime you get more than 5 to 8% of blacks involved in anything, whites are going to put up chains. They're going to stop you. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks move into their community, they're going to put their house up for sale. If more than 5% of the blacks, 8% of blacks go into their schools, they're going to pull their kids out of school. If more than 5 to 8% of the blacks come into their businesses, they're going to move the business out of town, cross town, out of the country. If more than 5 to 8% of the blacks come into their association, they'll resign. They got a quota system. And people say, well, blacks are against affirmative action. No, they're not against affirmative action. They're against affirmative action for you. You see, whether it gets a set aside, racism is nothing but preferential treatment for whites. They say they're against preferential treatment. You hear them say they're against set-asides. Jim Crow is nothing but a 100-year set-aside program for whites. So they set aside the best restaurants, the best food, the best schools for whites. They say they're against quotas. You got a quota system, I told you, in the immigration laws. Today, you still are a planned minority. You can't win. So now let me get to some solutions for you very quickly. I have a few more minutes I got left. What we're going to do across this country now is going to call Powernomics. That's a new book coming out called Powernomics, Unleashing Black American Potential. It's a follow-up to the book Black Labor, White Wealth. It'll show you in very specific terms what you got to do to be competitive. The things we got to focus on is in broad categories with specific principles. The first is a community. You cannot do anything unless you have a community. Your community is your social cohesiveness. The only power, the potential that black people have in America is your social, racial cohesiveness. If you don't have that, you have no power. Forget about everything else. That's a fact of life. You got to have a community because the community will give you your businesses. It'll give you your sales opportunities and your markets. Now, how do you develop communities? First thing you must do is stay out of all cross-purpose issues. Cross-purpose means horizontal issues. Don't get involved in any horizontal issues. Let me explain it to you. I see the puzzlements in your eyes. First, racism is vertical. Remember this. Racism is straight up and down. Racism means I don't care whether you are the lowest income black or the highest, the best educated or the least educated. It doesn't make any difference. You're all in the same tube. Okay? That's what Malcolm X was asking. What is a black man with a PhD? Remember that saying? He answered, well, he's still a Negro. Okay? It means it doesn't make any difference. You're all in it together. That's straight up and down. Horizontal issues are any issue that pertains to everybody. Stay out of it. You're the weakest and poorest, most vulnerable people. Don't get involved in it. Because the only people that can benefit are those people who are directly behind where the horizontal crosses the vertical. Okay? The only people who benefit are where those two points cross. That's too small. You don't have that kind of energy and resources to waste. Now, what's a horizontal issue? Sexism is a horizontal issue. When you get into these various religious issues, that's a horizontal issue. Poverty is a horizontal issue. I keep telling some of my civil rights leaders, stay away from poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is a fix. It's a given. You're always going to have poor people. And people say, well, you're going to have poor Greeks, poor Indians, poor Lithuanians, poor Hungarians. Quit trying to eradicate poverty and try to get as many black folk as you out and leave poverty alone. But they try to eradicate something that can't be eradicated. Culturalism, that's a horizontal issue, and it pertains to everybody. Let me give you about sexism, for instance. I tell black women who always want to get into sex issues, they think that somehow that the issue is sex rather than racism. See, my great-grandmother was not enslaved because she's a woman. She was enslaved because she was black. Okay? And if you're going to get into sexism, I want black women to understand this, to keep your priorities in order. If I say abracadabra right now and sexism disappeared, you still can't go into place because you're black. And if you keep it in order, remember what your mother felt. The minute she knew she was pregnant, she knew at that moment she was going to have what? A black child long before she knew the sex. So you keep your priorities straight and say, since my color came before my sex, I'm going to keep it in that order. You always say black first. So stay out of those cross-purpose issues, and I'll explain all the next time I come back out here on a Powernomics workshop or something. But that's very important. I can show you all the problems you got with that. And see, but once you stay out of those horizontal issues, like I tell some of my Muslim friends, I said, don't be worried about pushing Islamic faith. Push your skin color first and stay aligned with your people. And I tell them, the people in the Baptist church, quit worrying about being a Baptist and worry about being black. And again, I have to give credit to your minister. It seems like he's one of the few in the country who understands that. That you put who you are and as a people before you start talking about what denomination you belong to. And especially since most of the denominations on the earth all work together to enslave black folk. All of them pimp and hustle black folk. The Catholics, the Protestants, the Baptists, the Jews, and everybody else got black folk. But what we're going to do then is start, once we get past building these communities, then we're going to start getting into what we call practicing, building alternative economics.
Hey, welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob. You know, one thing I like to do when I do my shows is to not so much create controversy, but to get you to think, you know, what is controversial. Okay, so a lot of things that brother was saying, he said this years ago, and you can see a lot of shit come to light. And this is, I think these clips that I got of him, they go back maybe like 20 years or more. I got one that goes back to, I think, like damn near it's like in the 90s or the 80s. I was like, wow. And I do got some that's in the 90s. So a lot of things he's been saying, you know, when do you pay attention to it? I mean, I don't give a fuck about, you know, a Negro that once lived in the hood, but go ahead want to make his, you know, that inspires him to go ahead and make movies and this and that, or you know, the stuff that he learned in the hood. I mean, like, you know, ball players, you learned your skills in the hood. You didn't go ahead and learn your skills over there with the white. You know, so and I had to look at that. You know, I played football and I played basketball in school. So you know, like, what the hell? What kind of nonsense is this, man? You just forget where you come from? So now...
Exactly.
Now, we got this thing. I mean, I don't want to go on about that, but I want to get straight to what's going on now. And I got some other stuff I want to talk to you about, brother. I'm glad you came back. It's like I was saying, I want to go ahead and have we have a conversation leading to a solution. Okay, because Brother Umar corrected me on my show one time, man. I was like, I want to get to solutions. He's like, no. We must, you know, look at the problem, see what the problem is, analyze the problem. Don't spend a lot of time. And then I talked to him again in person. He was like, you got to go ahead and analyze that problem and, you know, see what kind of solutions we have. The things that we can't do that we can keep from some of these things we call problems. So, you know, he gave me a bunch. He gave me a mouthful that day, and I was like, okay, let me switch up a little bit. So, because you can... I think he was saying something like, you can go ahead and be trying to go ahead and, you know, create a solution, and you also create another problem. So, like, you know, listen to Dr. Claude Anderson, when he's talking about poverty, you always going to have poverty. You always going to have poor folks.
Right. Yes, sir.
So,
and
you know,
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, brother. I was listening.
Okay, man. And then, too, with Dr. Claude Anderson, man, okay, as you know, you got four factors of production: land, labor, capital, risk management, okay? So, therefore, as you were saying, is all these pro athletes, man, they didn't start their careers, man, you know what I'm saying, in college or in the pros and what have you. They started in the neighborhood, on a neighborhood playground, on a neighborhood football field, or even at the inner city schools from Chicago to Los Angeles to Oakland to Philadelphia to New York City to Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you see, and that is where, you know, they had started rooting their talent. They started evolving it and what have you. And then, of course,
Hold on. I want to show you something. You're talking about, you know, evolving their talent. I mean, you've been to Chicago, right?
Yes, sir. I was born there.
So you know that, hey, look, you know, goddamn it, a lot of neighborhoods got vacant lots.
Exactly. Sandlot
so
football,
in order for me to get my footwork
baseball.
Together, you know, I had to go ahead and dodge like big ass holes, big bricks, pieces of wire, parts of an old building that had been there. Shit, hey, they got you some running skills, man.
Yes, sir, most definitely. You know, and then also, too, I was born in Chicago, but I grew up in Los Angeles. You see what I'm saying? And of course, you got those big sandlot fields in L.A. as well, too, because Chicago goes
skyward. You got them in L.A.
Skyward.
As well, man, because when I was in the military, I was in San Diego for a minute. So I used to come up to L.A., and I had an apartment. That was like my getaway because I didn't like doing whatever I was doing. I didn't like being around everybody else, you know. You know, everybody want to congregate over here and be hanging out. Hey, let's go to a party and same fuckers at your station with. I never was into that shit. So I had me an apartment. It was like 3rd and Catalina in Los Angeles. And I love it.
Oh, man, Catalina, you doing good, man. That is its own island, man. You're doing real good if you had an apartment in Catalina.
Man, It was some, you know, I was engaged in some other stuff, so, but, and you know, some things above water, some things underwater, but, hey, I'm from Chicago, I learned from hustlers here and this motherfucker, man.
Oh, yes, sir, most definitely, man. You know what I'm saying? And as you know, man, it has a certain reputation in Chicago. After all, it was the home of Al Capone for many years. You know what I mean? But another Chicagoan, man, who I pay a great deal of respect to, man, I've read some of her works and going to read some more of hers, is the one and only Ms. Ida B. Wells. They had a housing project named
yeah.
after her. It's because yeah. my mother grew up in Ida B. Wells housing project, and she would document the number of lynchings as the best of her ability that were occurring down in the South. And so therefore, so when I get people who come on my show, man, my antagonizers, man, I'm not going to mention none of their names. You're familiar with them. You know, they're going to sit up there and say, well, what about the Greeks? What about this? What about
right.
this, that, that, the other? And I go on and tell them, I says, look, man, to be honest about it, I really don't give a good goddamn about them, man, is because I'm concerned about my people. You see what I'm saying? How in the hell you going to love somebody else, man, and hate yourself? You see, that's another thing that you so eloquently now pointed out on the plantation system. You see what I mean? Just like the movie Django with Jamie Foxx that I loved when he was going there, you know, getting his black woman. But Samuel L. Jackson, and if you hear Samuel L. Jackson, yeah, I would get with you in Los Angeles, man. You had no business playing that house of nigga role, Steven. Now, the reason being is because he was an established actor already. Now, I can understand, Nas, if he was coming up, you know what I'm saying, you know, in his roles, but once he had reached his stardom, you see what I'm saying, man, you could be very, very selective about your roles, because a lot of them, what they do, man, they start producing their own films, like Spike Lee, case in point, you see what I'm saying? And let's
yeah.
look at it, may he rest in power, the one and only Mr. John Singleton, man, you know that movie, that Boys
right.
in the Hood, man, yeah, that was atypical South Central Los Angeles right there, sir, you know what I mean, and what have you, and then, too, I liked it, the song or the soundtrack at the end where the sister says, this is Elaine, I'm going to be your tour guide through South Central Los Angeles, you know what I mean,
yeah,
and she's talking about, he's got the palm tree, yeah, yeah, exactly, because you got the palm tree, you got the nice sunshine, you know what I'm saying, but what's the matter? Be sure to record your extracurricular activities by the police. You know, there's a drive-by going on doing to you and what have you. Better pack your shit and get the fuck on. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, and she told it real. But also, too, is that the amount of
Hey, man, you know what you made
generate,
me do, man? Get checked yourself.
What's that?
You know what?
Yeah.
You know, for those, you know, for those haters that come to your show, We need to
yes.
go ahead and capture that little clip there. You know, get your shit and get the fuck on, and you play that shit on when you get rid of it.
Yeah,
I got to have
yeah,
that,
that's
man.
Right.
Hey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I had to get with the co-producer, man, you know, Brother Chad, and ask him to put that clip in there, yeah, because the song is by Ice Cube, yeah. The Live and
yeah, yeah.
Die in L.A. Wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's by Ice
Cube. Yeah, man, I got to have it myself.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah,
yeah, most definitely. You know.
Go ahead, bro.
Yes, sir. And then, of course, too, as you know, man, that you had a whole lot of black folks, you know, migrate to Los Angeles, man, particularly after the Second World War to escape the Jim Crowism of the South.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
you know, Chicago. Yes,
oh, check this out.
Chicago,
hold on. I remember seeing this,
yes,
seeing stuff on the news. They was talking about the, you know, at that time the brothers was going ahead migrating. But there were a lot of dock workers and landowners over there that they
right.
fucked out of the land. And the black dock workers, man, they messed their asses
oh,
up.
Oh, hell yeah.
Some of them black dock workers actually owned that area.
Exactly. Okay, one of them is Manhattan Beach, okay, and another one, man, was up there in the Bay Area, man, around a place called Pittsburgh, California, if memory serves me correct. And then, because I don't have my notes in front of me, so I'm going off of memory. So if I make some errors, you know, feel free to correct me, okay?
Well,
it's
you,
because
you
had
right
a lot
now,
of black folks, man.
It was a little bit I understood
yeah,
about it, but, you know, hey, look, we can go ahead and do some more research and do something on that. Maybe we can go ahead and grab or get some of the descendants or some people who know directly about that situation and bring them
oh,
to
yes,
our
tour. Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir, absolutely.
You know,
because
I
definitely...
think that's one of the things that we need to, you know, to do is to keep pushing our history and keep letting people know what we're going through and also letting and we have to devise a plan to go ahead and help our youth
Absolutely.
The plan has to also go ahead and include the parents. So one of the things that I keep trying to, I'm trying to work on is trying to get the, these farms and stuff, you know, like Dr. Claude Anderson had.
Exactly.
That history. And so at same time, I want to go ahead and try to work on you going ahead and having ways, you know, something to eat. But, you know, let's figure out how to go ahead and what we're growing, we put that on the market. So that pays for your place to stay.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely,
so,
most definitely. And
well,
also,
that's,
too,
that's
Brother Nas, if you ever...
I'm trying to work on, because I see a lot of people talking about, let's come together. Come together for what? I see a lot of people going here, let's get in the street and march. March for what? What you going to do at the end? What are you going to do when you finish marching? Who are you marching to? Marching from? What's the fucking point?
Exactly.
It just it hurts the shit out of me.
King.
I want to go ahead and see at the end, if you're going to go from, like, you know, 1st Street to 5th Street, and you protesting on that street, so on 5th Street, you should go ahead and have a group of individuals saying, we're going to go ahead and go here and here and keep this going. You know,
right.
Don't go ahead and, you know,
exactly.
Pop up and have a protest here, then, you know, protest in a few weeks or whatever. No, keep that shit going every fucking day. They keep pounding the message like these people pound the message with your ass.
Oh, absolutely, most definitely, man. And then on top of it, too, like, you got all these fucking migrants that's coming here, as Dr. Claude Anderson had predicted years before, and they are the new Ku Klux Klan, is because you already see over there on the south side of Chicago where they just go up there and slash that black girl in the face. You see what I'm saying? Now, where's those street crews at right there, man, you know, to go carry out some retaliation on that? You see what
I'm
saying?
Hold on. You know what? A few years ago, man. See, I'm also a member of the UNIA, okay?
Oh, okay.
I'm also a member of the United Negro Improvement Association.
Negro Improvement Association, Marcus Garvey. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So it's once we had a meeting. I forgot what was going on. So a lot of brothers was inside talking, you know, in the hall we had, and I believe it was somebody else I brought over, and we kept referring to some of these idiots as street tribe members. Like, what the fuck? I don't agree with that.
Right.
I don't agree with that. I mean, I grew up around a lot of them folks, family members, you know, gangbanging and shit, but I don't agree with that shit.
Right.
I ain't never seen no point in it. Me growing up, I ain't seen no point in it. My thing was once I started seeing how the fuckers was up on Madison, you know, they was always straight about that money. And it wasn't about straight violence. They could do what they can to go ahead and protect their money. But then most of them was about that money. And then I seen some of them that used to go ahead and be on the west side. I seen them go ahead and take that money and do other stuff with it, do real business.
Right.
Just go ahead and keep recycling this poopy shit. Make your money so you can go ahead and live a better life. You know, you got family. Take care of your family. But you can't do that when you're doing that dumb shit. You got to look over your shoulder all the time.
Yes, sir, most definitely, too. And then to mention the fact, man, is that keep in mind is that in Chicago, we have a very, very huge black population. In Los Angeles, it's the exact opposite. See, we're the minority there. You see what I mean? And then on top of it
check this out. This is like part of that. The other part that irks me is that you've been told a lot of fucking times, you know, circulate the black dollar with black folks. Okay, I'm all for that. Okay, so circulate it to, you go on one street, you got black businesses, you got one black business, but you really don't have this lot of real black ownership. I mean, and then these neighborhoods should be a hell of a lot of black businesses. What's the plan to go ahead and create more black businesses? So this way we ain't got to fuck with a lot of these goddamn people. You working with your people in a common interest, building a community, and you not fucking with these other goddamn people.
Hey, facts. Also, too, man, I just got a text from Paris, man. He's letting you know, he's asking me to let you know, man, that he's in the queue. You know what I'm saying? But Chef Rob, no, you are absolutely right about that. It's because, you see, because if it wasn't for black labor, man, you know, off that plantation system, it wouldn't have built the goddamn country in the first place, number one. Number two is, man, is that like how they were systemically, man, were prohibit black men from taking part in the trade unions. Like when you had the Great Migration from the South to Chicago, to Detroit, to Cleveland, and then, you know, you had the Painters Union, the Plasterers Union, the Steelworkers Union, but you had to be a member of the union to get the fucking...
Okay, so when I came out the Army, right, this is why I had reenlisted into the Navy, because it was like, you know, these motherfuckers ain't getting no job. I was in the Army as a plumber, man, a fucking plumber and water treatment. When I got home, when I got out, when I got my fucking discharge papers, it was like, okay, let me see who's going to go ahead and hire me. Man, these companies didn't want to fuck with me. Only thing they kept telling me is you're going to have to go to apprenticeship training. Motherfucker, I just went to
Yeah, right. See that part.
So then they told me, at the, in that same fucking breath, well, and then, like, well, we got to put you on a waiting list. And I was like, okay, I'm waiting for it. The waiting list is 8 fucking years, 6 years here, like 10 years. And I was like,
Yeah, it's prepackaged bullshit, to quote the Queen Mother, Tupac's auntie. You see what I'm saying? So therefore, when we come up there and talking about, well, man, we got to do some businesses for ourselves, you know, just like how they crumb-bummed on me on my show. Well, that's racism, guy. And I have to tell them, first place, man, let me tell you something. We are in no position to implement any type of fucking racism. One, man, we don't control no major industries. Two is we don't control no goddamn police departments. Three is you got these ass-scratching sellout ass as Negro-ass politicians from Los Angeles to the Bay to Chicago to New York. Oh, Eric Adams up there. Oh, man, let the migrants come in here. Same thing with Brandon Johnson. Oh, yeah, let the migrants come in here. And one thing I appreciate about the hometown, man, is where the South Side went up there, and they went and told that motherfucker Brandon Johnson, no, man, we're going to run these fucking immigrants out of here because you up here opening the shelter for the immigrants to come in, but you prevent the kids from playing their Pop Warner football and doing positive things over there on the South Side and on the West Side. But yet, though, you know, you're knuckling under to all these other motherfuckers. And this is why I said, man, that a black politician ain't shit. And then if you damn politicians out there hear me, the number to give me a fucking call at is 516-418-5996. And we invited a great deal of the majority of you motherfuckers in that Congressional Black Caucus, and y'all are a fucking joke. Y'all are sitting up there wearing about every goddamn body else instead of dealing with your own people's problems. Y'all are sitting up there talking about, oh, man, we, you know, we got good here. Vote for Biden. Biden was the motherfucker that gave you that federal crime bill that led to mass incarceration. Oh, man, well, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, she's so great. Kamala Harris was the biggest bed wench, man, you know, in California politics. You know, Willie Brown, who was the mayor of San Francisco, he's 60, he was fucking her, she's 30, now you see how she got up in her career, you see what I'm saying? And yeah, I said it, you know what I'm saying? Shabaka Sanchez, Shabaka Black Experience Enhanced. Yes, sir.
You sound like you got a lot of bent up frustration, and you sound like you're about to explode.
Sir.
Yeah, bro, you're right about it. You know, I was like, hell yeah, you know, shit, yeah, you're correct.
Yeah, you know, and I'm talking about, man, you know, as what we've been through as a people, man, who wouldn't have these issues, you know what I'm saying, and what have you. This is why I appreciate Brother Parris when he was running for mayor of Denver, Colorado. He went out there and stated that he was about a black first agenda, okay? So the man that went through a lot of opposition and what have you, you know what I'm saying? They tried to shame his name, but he persevered. Then there was a dude by the name of Jeff Farr back there. You know, we call him Jeff Fart, okay? And he had blocked me, man, is because he was sitting up there, man, having one of all them inclusive meetings in the community, and I had stated to him, I says, well, what are you ass scratchers going to do for the black community of Denver, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and they hit him kind of hard, but one thing I have to do is give it to him, Jeff Fart, on that one, is that he did have a sister there who had answered my question directly, precisely, and quite intelligently, so I give him that, but he doesn't want to give Paris, you, or me or people who think like us the proper respect of saying, hey, well, you know what, yeah, you know, we are black folks right here. Yes, it is because, as Malcolm said, they're not killing us because we're Christians. They're not killing us because we're Muslims. They're not killing us because we're atheists or agnostics. They're killing us because we're black folks, period. You see, and that issue has to be addressed. You see what I'm saying? And then just like when they murdered Mr. Philando Castile, you know, that damn Yanez, okay, just like, oh, man, you know, now it's like what they did to little Tamir Rice. Then also, too, just like what they did to Eula Love in Los Angeles. You see, I believe that there was in the late 80s, I believe, okay, where Ms. Love was out there in South Central, you know, the Southern California Gas Company was coming in to turn off her gas, you know what I'm saying? And I think in Chicago, you guys call it people's gas. Okay, so they coming off, turning off her gas. She says, hey, man, don't turn off my gas because I have to provide for my children. You see what I'm saying? And then the state of California will see I have no gas. Then they will want to take her children away from her and put them in foster care, which the damn raggedy-ass state of California would do. So therefore, the gas man, you know, pushed her aside, went on there to turn off her gas. She bopped him upside the head with a shovel. So he calls the lap dogs. That's what I call the LAPD. Okay, so they come out there saying that she had a knife, and they put 32 bullets in that woman in front of her children. So Johnny Cochran, great black lawyer in Los Angeles, man, who took on a lot of cases for the black community pro bono, all the way from Eula Love, man, to the Deadwiler case, all the way up to getting Geronimo Pratt out of prison, who was wrongly convicted. You know what I mean? So, you know, and Mr. Cochran passed away, you see. But Mr. Cochran, man, he was heavy. The LAPD hated him. And as far as that O.J. Simpson shit was concerned, man, I have no comments on that because that shit was ridiculous, you know. But as they say, there's no black power in white pussy, and that's what O.J. Simpson got caught up with. And apologize for that.
Man. Oh, man.
The ladies,
you know,
are, you know, listening.
Yeah. I got fucking, they messed me all up, man, with this blog. They just, I can't believe it. I was trying to find it. You know who another person who said what you just said?
Who that?
Muammar Gaddafi said that. And who was Dr. John Henry Clark has said that. He was
saying that.
Yes, sir. And I'm sending you to Europe to learn so you can come back here. And he was saying something that I'll give you no education or something like that in the legs of a white, of a European woman.
Right.
I gotta,
exactly.
I wish I could find it. But the Dr. Claude Anderson was also, it also said, hey, look, you know, stay away from these, I forgot how he put it. Hey, you're talking about stay away from these organizations, you know, church, this, that, blah, blah, blah. And he was saying, hey, look, if you're going to go ahead and be there, you be there, be black first, or just leave them alone.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? And then, you know, man, and this is what I tried to explain to Bianchi one time, man, you know what I mean? And he's up there talking about, well, we're all a human beings and all this. And I'm trying to say, no, brother, they don't look at us as human. They look at us as subhuman. You see what I mean? And then old Joe Gibson, he's going to try to talk that shit, we're all the same. And Joe Gibson is yet to still take up my invitation to come out here to Las Vegas, man, in the middle of June. And you've got to leave your sunscreen at home. You see what I'm saying? And I will prove to you in about 10, 15 minutes, man, that we are not the same. But you got to give me some information, man, on how to deal with your sunburn, man, because I'm not going to leave you out there. But you damn sure would leave me out there in the blizzard cold, you know what I mean? But I'm not that inhumane. You see what I mean? And then another thing, too.
Wait,
like,
hold on. Wait a minute, what you mean?
Yes,
you ain't gonna live? I'll teach you. Fuck that. Fuck that, all that. Let their ass freeze to death. Fuck them.
That's right. You know what I'm saying? You know, And then also, too, I went through Denver, Colorado recently, man, and got snowed on real bad, man, you know, when I hooked up with Paris and what have you briefly and whatnot. And, man, and that cold was so cold, Nas, you know what I'm saying? I said, I got to get back to the heat because, see, we are heat-loving people. See, the sun loves us. You see what I'm saying? That's why you got the melanin and what have you. And then,
Let me give you another one. I can give you another one. He had a reggae track, too, and the brother's saying, hey, look, life never could start in the refrigerator. And life can't be sustained in the refrigerator. You may have some fungus viruses, but you need an incubator. You need that heat.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, sir. To procreate life, you know, and then the vegetation needs it, you know, as well, too, you know what I'm saying? And then on top of it is that you got to look at the fact, man, is that we have got to become economically self-sufficient, man, to save ourselves, man, because we're the only ones who's going to save ourselves. And as you so eloquently had pointed out.
But you see, you got to, you just mentioned these guys, and you see what kind of opposition we up against. Okay? He's like the only one. So if you remember what Claude Anderson said when he said when your people come out of town, you come to your crib and you get up and you get in the car and you go out to the white neighborhood and people are saying, oh, how could those white folks afford those nice big houses? He said, hey, it's easy.
Right.
It's your money.
Exactly.
So he said, hey, look, they living off two incomes. They living off 100% of theirs. And at least, I think you said like 98% of yours.
Exactly, 95. And that is a fact, you know. Yes, sir, and that there is a fact, man. And Los Angeles really duplicated, really proves that point, man, is because L.A. makes its money off the movie-making industry, the record industry, or the ghetto gaggers going out there, you know what I'm saying, in the porn industry and what have you. And I hadn't used that term, but they get a lot of them black girls out there like the Harvey Weinsteins and what have you, go make the movies, put three and four white men on them at the same time. That type of shit. So hopefully, you know, Harvey Weinstein, man, you know, does fall. You know what I mean? And they did that to quite a few black actresses that went out there. And I'm gonna name a few. Okay, Dorothy Dandridge. Okay, that's one. Nichelle Nichols, who used to be on the Star Trek series, was another one. Let me see. And quite a few, you know, who were up and coming, and I'm in the process of reading this book by Cicely Tyson called Just As I Am, right? Okay, but I don't think they got to Miss Tyson like that because she was really of a woman of integrity, is because when she stated that she was making a movie Sounder in the year 1972, and this is the pre-black exploitation movies, well, white producers going to sit up there and say, hey, niggas love sex, violence, and guns. We plan to give them a belly full of it. So this is why you had shit like Superfly, The Mac, Cleopatra Jones, all other kind of shit. You know what I'm saying? Sheba Baby, Coffee with Pam Grier, and all this old type of shit. You know what I'm saying? And then, but the only movie that I dug made out that era was the movie Sounder with Cicely Tyson and Paul Winfield. It was in the Depression era Louisiana. Paul Winfield that went and stole some food for his family to eat, so he went to jail. He went on the chain gang, right? So therefore, when the police came to get Paul Winfield, Sounder, you know, attacked the police and they shot Sounder, the dog, because the movie Sounder is named after the dog, Sounder. Okay, so Sounder goes off into the bush. So then they take Paul Winfield to jail. So then Cicely Tyson is telling her son, Kevin Hooks, who's like 12, 13 years old now, hey, you got to go see your daddy to let him know how we're doing. And she says, and you don't stay at nobody's house. You go camp on the side of the road, and here you go. I need you to do this. So he goes, sees his daddy. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, he gets back to Cicely Tyson. And then at the ending of the movie, man, and this is the part, Oh, man, that would bring tears to your eyes. He's walking down the road, and then, you know, he's going up to his house, and then Sister Tyson sees him, and she's running across the big field to go greet him, you know what I'm saying? And then she finally greets him, and then Sounder comes out the bushes, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's the kind of shit that I like to see. You see what I'm saying? Man, you know, don't be giving me, man, these fake-ass simplified motherfuckers talking about that they a pimp, and this trick-ass motherfucker ain't got no more than $10 in his pocket. You know what I'm saying?
And didn't they have, like, a remake of Superfly? Didn't I see that? Superfly in the Mac.
Yeah, they did a sequel to Superfly. Yeah, they did. Oh, wait a minute. I stand corrected. Yeah, they did do a remake of Superfly with a dude by the name of Nathan Dupree, who got his movie career started, man, when he used to be on the soap operas. You know what I'm saying? Now, and the way I heard it out there, if you get you a job as a regular on a soap opera, man, you're going to get paid handsomely. You see what I'm saying? Because you're working steadily. You see what I'm saying? But the soap operas is just that, a bunch of prepackaged bullshit. You know what I'm saying?
Have
I seen what now?
Like foreign soap operas, like, you know, I've been to Africa, I've seen them there. I've seen like, you know, the novellas in Mexico and other Spanish speaking countries. I've seen fucking soap operas in Japan, the Philippines, man, Singapore, Kenya. I was like, man, shit, you know, they all stupid. And then, like, some of them, like, they have like subtitles, you know, because some of them, you'll see a lot of like the novellas of Spanish speaking ones. You'll see a lot of them. I seen a few of them when I was in Africa, man. It was there like subtitles and shit. So, man, you know, they that shit's all over the place. But I didn't see like American ones, man.
Right. Okay.
Not when I was overseas.
Okay.
I didn't see like American ones when I was overseas. I mean, what's it called? General Hospital and what is all this shit, man?
Yeah, that's General One Life to Live. Oh, let's see, All My Children. And, and The Guiding Light, As the World Turns, and all this old type of shit, or they call it daytime television, you know what I mean? And then Rosalind Cash, you know, who's a great black actress, by the way. You know Rosalind Cash, you've seen her in everything, man. You've seen her from Melinda.
Names, you know, but I know their faces, so I never watched.
You would know Rosalind Cash, you know, she passed away, man, you know what I'm saying, and her last acting job was when she was on General Hospital, I believe, and she had passed away from breast cancer, and she was part of the Negro Ensemble Company, you know, out of New York and what have you, where a lot of black actors had came up at, and then, of course, as you know, when they did the work on the stage in New York, then they would hop that freight train or the train or the airplane all the way to Los Angeles, California, you see what I'm saying? And then, you know, trying to make it big off there in the movie business. And there's an area of L.A. called Baldwin Hills, California, where Ike and Tina Turner used to live. And that there was pretty much like L.A.'s black version of Beverly Hills. You see, it's because, you know, when you had the housing restriction of the 60s and stuff like that, man, you know, they didn't allow black folks to live up in the Hollywood Hills until about 1964. The same thing in Beverly Hills, California, which is its own separate city. You don't want to get stopped in Beverly Hills, man, because I got stopped in Beverly Hills one night, man. A cop said, "Is this your car?" I said, "Yeah. Here's the registration. Here's the ID on a California registration, California driver's license." He says, "Man, you turn this motherfucker around. You take your ass back into Los Angeles and don't you come back here into Beverly Hills."
Wow.
See? Oh, yeah,
fuck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
see,
yeah.
Look, this is how I see that. See, this is, you know, when almost every black person, I say almost every black person in America can go here and tell you about a crazy fucked up ass experience they got here with cops or store owners or this or their neighbors.
Yo, yes,
you know,
sir.
And these are not, this should be enough incentive for you to get your own shit, start your own business, get away from these motherfuckers, and do a place like Baltimore.
Absolutely.
You know, so
exactly.
You know, it's crazy as hell. And then you mentioned something about the brothers and sisters coming down to City Hall and talking to Brandon, right?
Right.
So, hey, let me play something for you, man, because this sister, this is another old clip, because she came at the politicians pretty hard, especially the black
people. Yes, sir.
Check it
out. Okay.
To the extent that black relationships have survived as they have, what say you about that 400 years later?
It is amazing that black relationships have lasted for 400 years. They lasted this morning. They're also going to last tonight, and you may not even know the person to whom you will have the relationship with. But they do tend to go over. Relationships do go over like that. And as we move into what has happened to this, I know that our relationships sometimes really reach a low ebb. That's one of the reasons why we wrote the book, How to Find and Keep a BMW, a Black Man Working, that was spelled out in there. This is very serious. Because relationships, our relationships didn't start yesterday or last week. It also started 400 years ago when those 19 persons were here. And I want you to remember something very important that one of our by any means necessary power brokers told us, and that was Malcolm X. He said, if we can only remember that you didn't land at Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on you. And it's very essential that we kind of keep this in place. And knowing that these are the things that happen, then we have to move more to change it. See, we have a system that would not like to see black males and black females together. They would not like to see that happening at all. Because once we come together, they understand the power of the strength of the black woman, the queen of the universe. They know that. Her strength. They also know the power of the black male, the warrior. If you would turn him loose, he will protect also his family and things that need to be done. And because they understand that if our relationships are together, then they will lose, but if our relationships are torn up, then we can forever be treated in certain ways by the oppressors. That's why they gave us something called integration, which is nothing but the illusion of inclusion. They gave us this. They actually gave the statement. And when they gave that statement, it meant that they could go right into your homes. They went into the black homes now, the powers that be, and told us that you cannot discipline your children anymore. And if you discipline your children, you were going to jail. It's this kind of thing they told us. Now, this is amazing that, you know, the black parents who in Africa, that was out of the question. Some social worker come in there saying you can't discipline your children. The social worker would disappear. As you all know, this kind of thing would go on. You would be sitting in a place like this, and all you had to do was act up and do something wrong, and all your mother had to do was to glance in your direction. Do y'all remember that? And you remember that the glance meant, don't let me have to get up and come over there. And every once in a while in the black family, there was a fool who would challenge the glance. And if you could get home over the foot, over the ironing cart, over whatever, you were sent to the backyard to get something off the peach tree. And if you brought something in that was too short, God forbid that you would do something like that. But then it got so terrible and frightening us. This is why we got to take this back. And this is the best part of our action plan, is to reclaim the minds of our children. Because then they went into the public schools and took discipline out of there. So when we acted up in there, they put our boys, our black men, into something called special ed classes. Those special ed classes are nothing but holding cells until they can go to the state prison. But this is what they did. And then, the one thing that they knew, that if we can put them in prison, if we can have them convicted for a felony, then once they get out of prison, they cannot get a job because of that. They cannot get the job. And then if they happen to eke out and find a job, then they have to pay taxes on a job, yet they cannot vote. And I call that taxation without representation. That's what we're looking at.
Exactly.
And if one of the things that we would learn to do, they did a grand thing when they took that discipline away from us, because when they made our parents afraid to discipline the children, then what happened? We found out that the teachers were afraid of the principals were scared of the superintendent, superintendent was scared of the school board was scared of the parents, parents were scared of the children, and the children ain't scared of nobody. The reason why we're so pleased to have the covenant, it makes all of this type foolishness stop. It's going on under Angela Glover in San Francisco. It's all over the country, and they're all saying we finally have a movement where we can take back over the minds of our children. And the first thing we got to take over, the covenant taught us that we do not have to have black leaders anymore. It told us because everyone in this room is empowered to be a black leader. Everyone in this room. Because see, right now, these people that you're calling black leaders are not what they used to be with Marcus Garvey's day. They're not what they used to be back in the days of W.E.B. Du Bois or Martin Luther King. Those were the people that got us together and planted a strategy, and we're not looking for fame. But today's black leaders, I'm afraid, have become leading blacks. And don't ever confuse leading blacks with black leaders. Let me tell you why you don't do that. One of the reasons you don't confuse them, black leaders are chosen by you. They're chosen by the people they're going to lead. They're chosen by us. But let me tell you about the leading black. The leading blacks are chosen by the media. Leading blacks.
Right.
Leading blacks are chosen by ABC, all broadcasting Caucasians.
Should I stop her or let her go?
Leading blacks are also chosen by NBC. Nothing broadcasting but Caucasians. And the rest is chosen by CBS, the Caucasian Broadcasting System. And when you allow leaders to be chosen by the media that's owned by the corporations, when you get ready to change your lives, when you get ready to demonstrate, when you get ready to march, when you get ready to come to the covenant, when you get ready to endorse and make a Tavis one of our next elected officials, but what happens? Then you must take the time to carefully watch and see what the leading blacks are doing. Because that's when the leading blacks sneak into the door to the corporations, and they will tell the corporations, oh, we know how to go and put them down. We know how to get you some real affirmative action Negroes to come in here and work. We know how to do that. But at the end of the day, the leading blacks lead the corporations, and the leading blacks have gotten paid while we have gotten played.
That's Dr. Julia Hare out of San Francisco State University. She was the wife of Dr.
Man,
Nathan Hare.
Glad I knew you knew who that was, man. Like, man, I'm glad you brought that.
Oh, yes, sir, most definitely. And then there's Brother Marvin X, you know, who's a graduate of Cal State Fresno, where he picked up his PhD, I'm familiar with personally, from Panthertown, because that's where Shabaka's Black Experience in Hand started with. And Dr. Marvin X, he did the same thing Muhammad Ali did in 1967, and he refused induction into the conflict in Vietnam. And then Ronald Reagan, who was then the governor of California at that time, put him off campus, you know, kicked him off the California State University system where he couldn't lecture, you know what I mean? But Marvin X, yeah, he's based out of San Francisco. I'm very acquainted with that brother. You know, him and I have sat down and chopped it up many a times. And then, of course, Dr. Julia Hare, you know, she transitioned a couple of years ago, and her husband, Dr. Nathan Hare, you know, he's up in age, and I believe the brother is hospitalized, you know. And definitely check out Dr. Marvin X's wall on that. He'll keep you up on the update on Dr. Nathan Hare. But yeah, Nas, but everything that she said is right. You see what I mean? Is because, you know, these news corporations or these big-time television studios there in Los Angeles, you know, they got a lot of pull. They got a lot of influence on politics. Look at that bullshit that they did with Bill Cosby. Now, Bill Cosby had tried to buy NBC. Okay, and they were upset with him about Bill Cosby, but then they come up here with these women claim that Dr. Cosby had drugged them and violated them and
all this
type of shit.
Remember when they killed Bill Cosby's son about that same time he was negotiating?
Nas. I could take you right to the exact location where they killed his son, which is off the 405 freeway, although Chicago calls them expressways, which is going northbound, and it was off the Sunset Boulevard off-ramp. And that there, and when you get into that part of Los Angeles, you out there in the exclusive parts, out there in the mansions and what have you, where all the big movie directors is and all this stuff. And Mr. Cosby had allegedly was on his way to go see some individual at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why, but then this dude, this white boy, you know, had laid in wait and killed Mr. Cosby Jr., or Bill Cosby's son, his only son, by the way. You see what I'm saying? While he was changing a flat tire. So therefore, that flat tire could have been staged to go off at that particular point, or it's something more to it that sees the eye. You know what I mean? It's because how did he know that was Bill Cosby's son? And then on top of it, how did he know he was going to have a flat tire at that location? You see? And they yet to discuss that part. Yeah, I remember reading that there on the headlines of the LA Times. Oh, yeah, very much so. You see? But then again, you have to keep in mind is that when you are dealing with the San Francisco Bay Area, okay, and you're near a place called Berkeley, California, to quote Dr. Marvin X, Oakland, California is the city of resistance, because it was the birthplace of another organization that inspired the podcast of Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced on its 50th anniversary. And as you know, Nas, they had chapters in Los Angeles, Seattle, Washington, New York City, Chicago, Illinois. I don't have to say their names. We all know who they are. You know what I mean? And then these critics, these hypocritics, you know, that call into my platform, you know, these guys are black racists and all that. But you see, but you always want to see a black man being effeminized. You always want to see a black man, oh, y'all the boss, you the boss, and all that other type of shit. But as soon as he stands up to be a man, providing for his family and raising his children properly and protecting his wife and his daughters, oh, no, man, we got to kill him, man. You know, he's bad. He's terrible. He's this, that, that, the other. And this is why, you know, I always got to get off into a dressage with the George Floyd case. You see what I mean? Oh, and Sarge trying to tell me, well, George Floyd was all fentanyl, he OD'd. No, man.
Hold on.
Fucking
mud. Brown, the one who got shot over there in Missouri, in Ferguson?
Oh, Mike Brown. Yes, sir, Mike
right.
Brown.
Did Sarge
yeah,
ever
Mike
tell
Brown.
You how you felt about him?
Oh, yeah, Sarge going to tell me, man, that Mike Brown was a criminal, man, and that he was trying to steal something out the store and whatnot. So they called, what was that cop's name, Darren somebody, Derry. I forgot his name. Okay, but I do know that they did have a protest in Oakland, California about that when Darren Wilson got off. Yeah, and I hated to say I knew that he was going to get off, and they found him not guilty. They're saying that Mike Brown was a thug, intimidating people and all that, and Sarge trying to tell me, well, Mike Brown got here, what he deserved. No, he didn't. You know, no,
okay,
he didn't.
Okay.
No,
here,
he didn't.
Here's another one. Did you hear his thoughts about Trayvon Martin?
Oh, man, and that was a tragedy. Oh my God.
Did you hear what Sarge said about Trayvon Martin?
Oh, yeah, Sarge is going to say that Trayvon Martin, you know, and I'm paraphrasing him, not an exact quote, but his position was that Trayvon Martin brought it on himself, you know what I'm saying, because he fought with George Zimmerman. First place, George Zimmerman was a goddamn Paul Blart mall cop, vigilante motherfucker, going out there patrolling the neighborhood. And what the hell are you taking a damn 44 Magnum, man, you know, out there to do this shit here? Trey Deuce would have did it, man. A 25 caliber would have did it, you see? And so then
no,
Trayvon Martin
out,
had
brother.
A bad...
No, hold on.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You mentioned this dude. Now, you see the patterns with this dude?
Oh, yes, sir.
You see how, you know, what direction he go on with that bullshit? When he said he was with a Swiss cheese fucking Trayvon Martin? It upset me. I'll be honest, and I try to let him know that that's really fucked up shit for you to say to this dude to murder this baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Most definitely.
Murder
you know
his
what
baby,
I'm saying?
And he didn't have a weapon in his hand.
That
Trayvon wasn't approaching him.
Exactly.
He didn't get into contact.
You see what I'm saying?
That's why I didn't understand how that motherfucker ain't in prison.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? The same shit with that damn Kyle Schittenhouse, man. You know what I'm saying? That left Chicago, crossed into Wisconsin. Oh, I'm going to protect property. No, motherfucker, you ain't going to protect the property.
This
you going
your,
out there
this
because
ain't
you
your neighborhood.
Some black
you don't
you
own no
shoot.
Property here. You ain't had no business leaving your
right.
house.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
He got off.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you see, as you know, Nas, man, it's staged against us. The deck is staged against us, man. This is why they ridicule you. This is why they ridicule Brother Che. This is why they ridicule me with hate mail in my chat room and all that shit. And we love the ignorance, man. Hell, we laugh at it. You know what I'm saying? Joe Gibson, we have a time with Joe Gibson. And Sarge and Joe Gibson came on our platform one night, man, and they got beat up pretty bad, man, because what had happened was is that our original producer, the one and only Mad D, who had transitioned, his daughter, his firstborn, came on our platform because she had recently had came back from Azania. I don't call it South Africa. The proper name of the place is Azania. And she went on and checked all of them, you know what I'm saying? And it was trying to disrespect her, and she, just like her daddy, she held her own, and I give it to her and whatnot, and she is most definitely more than welcome to come back. Now, I got on one blog talk show, Nas, and then this idiot is going to sit up there and tell me that Elon Musk is an African. Elon Musk is not no African. He's a goddamn boy, okay?
Hold on, wait. I can't remember what show I was on, man, on blog talk.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The one guy that was the host was a white dude, and then like I just had to call in because it was some of the stuff that one of his guests was saying, and the guest was from South Africa, a white dude, and he was trying to tell me I'm more African than you are, man. I fell out on the floor laughing my fucking head off.
Oh, yeah, me too, man, me too. And also, too, Nas, here's something for you. If you notice on the intro that Brother Paris and I play on Shabaka Black Experience Enhanced, it's called African Sunset, and it's by the one and only Ms. Miriam Makeba. Now, she was commonly referred to as Mama Africa. And as you do know, that she was married to Hugh Masekela. She was also married to Kwame Ture as well, too. And she was exiled from South Africa because of her stance against apartheid. You see what I mean? And then when she came back to South Africa, they wouldn't let her out of the country. You see what I mean? And so her children and her grandchildren, you know, they carrying on her legacy, you know what I'm saying, as well. And then I even think she even did a couple of episodes on The Cosby Show, you know what I mean, with Bill Cosby inviting her on there and whatnot. But you see, but what it is they're trying to keep this wedge, man, you know what I'm saying, between us and those on the continent. Now, Brother Paz had made a statement that made a lot of sense, is that you got to have the ones in Africa, you know, being on code for Pan-Africanism as well, too, because not only do you have the colonialism, you also have the neocolonialism. You see what I'm saying? And that's the worst fucking problem right there, is the neocolonialism. It's because these people over there, man, are siding with their oppressor, rather it be the Dutch, the British, the French, the Belgians, and what have you, and they're not embracing Africa and the whole diaspora, you see? Then you get these brain-dead-ass, ass-scratching Negroes like Tianki. He was one of the most stupidest ass brain dead motherfuckers that there is gone. And this is why we created the hashtag Resurrection of the Mental Dead. And also, too, Brother Niles, we do have a Facebook group by the same name, and it's self-explanatory of what it represents. You see what I mean? Because, you know, we've been through a lot of the people. We've come a long way, but we still got a long way to go. And the main thing is to get our black children away from these goddamn public indoctrination centers, is because they're not teaching our black children but the true nature of their history. They're trying to teach you that your history goes back on a plantation of some goddamn raping slave trading ass pedophile. We all the same. Well, you know, the Irish, and I throw them off my show, and Sarge would tell, you know, now you Irish motherfuckers, you own some slaves too. Why do you think you got so many black people with the name of McNeil, of McDonald, O'Neill, Shaughnessy? You see what I'm saying? And then when you tell them this, all you hear is crickets. You see what I'm saying? Well, the indentured servitude, well, see, he was there paying off a debt. Okay, now Sarge is going to try to argue with me about how I was telling how King Shaka had built the Zulu Empire. He's going to try to tell me, well, Shaka was a tyrant. No, Shaka formed a military war machine that scared the living shit out of them damn British. You see what I'm saying? And this is why when Seth Wilde, which was his great nephew in 1887, when they had the Zulu Wars over there, you see what I'm saying, where Cetewayo went before Queen Victoria and he had wanted his realm back, and Queen Victoria of England refused to give it to him. Okay, so then you had Mandela come up with the African National Congress. Then you also had the Mtonto We Sizwe, the Spear of the Nation, the Sharpeville Massacre of 1960, and this is why Mandela, you know, had went to prison, you see what I mean, because they were returning the force. The one article I was glad to see was in 1986, and as you know, when I was in my 20s, okay, picture on the LA Times, you know, the black community over there in Soweto or Johannesburg or Joburg, as they call it, coming together, and you see this white boy running his ass off. Man, oh man, that was a beautiful picture. Should have won a damn Pulitzer Prize, you know what I'm saying, because you finally saw the black community over there, you know, coming together some way. And this is why systemically, with this artificial intelligence shit, with the beers, with France, the Netherlands, you see what I'm saying, and England always want to keep a stronghold over there, and they always got these countries having colonial debt. And how the fuck you going to keep paying debt to the oppressor that's coming in there, that stripped the land, you know, degraded the people, you know what I'm saying, and then got all these
points.
Yes, sir.
I think it's the French who's getting the most money out of all the countries.
Right.
They also include Haiti in that list. I think it's like 14 African nations and Haiti.
Yeah.
And they had another Caribbean. They get money. And the money that the Haitians still have to pay them to this day since, like, I think, like the 1700s. They still have to pay them to this day. The French are calling their reparations.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
I don't hear the U.S. saying too much about that. Now Haiti has all these problems. Why don't you go ahead and get some of that money that they got to go ahead and keep sending over there to you guys so they can get that money and put it into their economy and take care of the people?
Exactly, and build up the infrastructures for businesses and commerce and agriculture to say to make it self-sufficient. Because as you know,
Let me show you something else. And like, and I can't remember what area. I want to say it's like more like the northern part of Haiti. It's a few areas in Haiti, and they also do this in Somalia. Few areas in Haiti, there's companies, right? And it's a collaboration with like U.S. companies and some European companies. They're growing fruits and vegetables there. And none of the money really comes back. They're paying some of the workers almost nothing, but a lot of stuff is being coming up to the U.S. And Somalia, that blew me away. Where hell, is Somalia, I think it's Ethiopia. It wouldn't be Somalia. Ethiopia, there's parts of that where the Europeans got it to where they can exclusively go ahead and get their produce and stuff grown down there, man. And how the fuck can they do this shit, man?
Yeah, well, see, what it is that you got these sellouts, you know, you got these neocolonialist politicians in Africa who are handpicked by the Europeans, and then they're backed by the U.S., you see, because the U.S. does a lot of clandestine shit, okay?
Yeah, I told you it's a collaboration in Haiti, you know, there's some... They're tagging it with something else, you know, but it's grown in Haiti, but somehow it's winding up in the U.S.
And the same thing with the Dominican Republic as well, too. You see what I'm saying?
That was a little bit different. It's a little bit different with them. They've actually created millionaires in Dominican Republic with them, because there's a lot of Dominicans got their hands on with it. But it's almost the same thing over there, too.
Yeah, because they share the same island called Hispaniola in the Caribbean, you know what I'm saying? Now, here's something, too, man, that'll blow your mind, man. The Bermuda Triangle, right, that goes down there, man, from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, man, down there to San Juan, Puerto Rico, then it goes up there to Bermuda. And we just want to know, man, you know, what's going on with that is because I saw some research being done on it, man, talking about that there's the Earth's magnetical field, you see, you know, with its alignment in the universe. Now, why am I bringing that up? Is because, you know, as you know, now a whole lot of our black scholars, man, from the continent, man, you know, had circumnavigated the globe, man, years before a filthy, lying, stinking ass, no bathing, lice-infested savage who was a fucking drunk by the name of Columbus, who thought he was going to India, and then thought he was going east. In actuality, he was going west, you see. So this is what I tell Sarge, Joe Gibson, and them guys over there and whatnot, is that, hey, man, get your fucking facts straight, man, because y'all keep going to these damn Eurocentric resources, but y'all don't never want to look at the Afrocentric sources of information, because this is what I had to tell Joe Gibson in the chat room. You look at Eurocentric sources. We look at Afrocentric sources. And then, of course, you know, Sarge, you know, but Sarge is Sarge, you know what I'm saying? What have you. Now, Sarge is going to tell me. Yes, sir.
Let me give you one. I had read part of like the I only read like a small part of it, because I was thumbing through it, and it was online, and it was the book from the Christopher Columbus, you know, with a couple of the guys they were writing home, and the person put this book together, got some of their diaries, you know, and some of what these guys were, you know, their journals, you know, some of the stuff these guys were saying about what they did. And the islands, man. Oh, man, it was it was horrible on how guys were describing the white boys getting off them boats and going ahead and murdering children. One of the things that they loved to do was to surround the village, capture the village, separate the men, the men and the able-bodied men from the women, the older people, and the children. They made them. A lot of men. They made them go ahead and go out and get like some. I think it was like an emerald or something like that. Some kind of rock and gold, whatever. Anything that was of value, okay, and dig different rocks and stuff, because they saw what they had in the village, and they said, hey, look, where'd you get this? Go, let's go get that. So they would take just by all the men. But at the same time,
right.
while the men was gone, man, they was raping the women, killing the elders, and even killing a baby.
Yes.
The guy was describing how this guy had grabbed a baby from this one lady's arms by the leg and smashed the baby's head up into a palm tree.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
you talking about some horrible motherfuckers, man?
Oh, yes, sir, without a doubt.
And they kept
thinking these ass
like
scratches in these jackets to start to love them.
They took almost every woman on the boat, and some of the women, none of, they didn't make it to nowhere. Some of them, they would go ahead and keep fucking them, and then just push them in the water with the sharks.
And then off of research that I've done now is that the sharks used to follow the slave ships, man, because they know they had good eating there. You know, when the slaves died in the passage. You see what I'm saying? And John Henry Clark's student, Dr. Marimba Ani, she writes a great deal of material on that, talking about the Ma'afa. And I think that Shahrazad Ali had said it best is that when she says, well, you know, the Native American women, you know, they don't tell them to forget their history when a white man came there and raped them and brutalized their children. They don't tell the Japanese people to forget about, you know, how they were interned in concentration camps during World War II out here in the western United States, from Idaho to California to parts of Nevada. But, you know, and then they damn sure don't tell the Jewish women about to forget about the Holocaust under Nazi Germany. So why the hell should we forget about slavery? You see what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. Hey, Brother Hale, that's just about my time, brother. It's been a great conversation with you, brother. We're going to have to do this again.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, is Brother Parr still in the queue?
I'm not sure. It says Snowman James, and, you know, it's just, you know, I'm not sure. He's not in the queue. And I see some people in the chat, but I don't know. It's just you and I in the queue.
Okay. Then maybe Brother Parrish is off in the chat room. You know what I mean?
Problems. I have some issues with Blog Talk Radio, but you know, hopefully I can work out the next show. But again,
right.
Brother, it's been nice talking. You know, and we got to do this again.
Almost
I will
definitely
do
nice.
As much as possible, man.
Oh, absolutely, Nas, and appreciate you, man, and keep dropping them gems and keep dropping that knowledge, you know what I'm saying? And then I'm going to scan some more Blog Talk shows later on and probably find Sarge somewhere, you know what I'm saying, to cuss him out, you know what I mean?
Well, let me know when you find him, man. I love giving him a hard time.
Oh, yes, sir, most definitely, Nas. Okay, brother. All right.
All right, brother.
Take care.
Good to you.
Always. Yeah.
Blog Talk Radio.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Color. I am a nightmare walking, psychopath talking, King of my jungle, just a gangster, stalking, living life like a firecracker, quick as my fuse. Vendetta's a death, back the colors I choose, red or blue, cuz of blood, it just don't matter, sucker died for your life when my shotgun scattered.
Colors.
The gangs of L.A. will never die. Just multiply colors.
Colors.